Hi, welcome to Navigating Developmental Delay Podcast. I'm Ms. Burr.
And I'm Dr. Hamilton.
We want to welcome you and encourage you to follow us on social media. You can find us on our Twitter platform at NavigatingDevel1, Instagram, all one word, Navigating Developmental Delay, and Facebook. We hope that you visit our social media sites. You can access them through our episode webpage or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is also on there, navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com. Be sure to check out our tweets as we will tweet out articles that we refer to on our podcast, and the links can also be found in our episode webpage.
So we wanted to go over our medical disclaimer real briefly at the beginning of each episode. We want to stress that we are putting this information out there for informational purposes only. We want to stress that we are not giving anyone medical advice or occupational therapy advice. For medical advice, you should reach out to your children's pediatrician or family physician only. So our podcast and blog disclaimer, while we make every effort to broadcast correct information, we are still learning. One doctor and occupational therapist may have a different way of doing things from another. We welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors. We take no money from advertisers at this time. By listening to this podcast or reading our blog, you agree not to use this podcast or blog as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others, including but not limited to patients that you are treating. Consult your family physician or your own physician for any medical issues you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast or blog. Under no circumstances shall Navigating Developmental Delays podcast, any guests or contributors to the podcast, or blog, or any employees, associates, be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast or blog. For a more detailed disclaimer, please visit our website at navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com. Hi everyone, this is our second podcast, Navigating Developmental Delays. Today we're going to be talking about how to support your children through in-person or hybrid school option. There are many different school options, as you guys have already, you know, heard from your schools and made a decision about. So we want to talk about a little bit of, brief background information. So we're going to be talking about, schoolwork, IEP plans briefly, how to request that schools maybe make your schoolwork due at slightly different times so it's flexible for parents, so you can have it due maybe at the end of the weekend instead of during the week, so parents can help if you're doing, the in-person or hybrid school option. And I think that everyone should have an emergency quarantine protocol for yourself. I mean, schools have plans, workplaces have plans. As parents, you should have plans as well. So some, have a plan for if your child gets quarantined. If your child gets exposed to someone, what are you going to do? What are the things you're going to do? Because really it's a matter of not if your child gets exposed, it's a matter of when your child gets exposed. So having an emergency plan in your mind, and some of the things, Erin, you were mentioning, like if you get a call from school, you had mentioned who is going to pick up the child from school.
Sure.
And, those kind of things, have an emergency plan for, is there like a backup babysitter who's going to help? So have a plan in your mind for quarantine. We'll touch on that briefly, but we're going to be doing this mostly in question and answer format. And I just want to remind parents to remember that testing for COVID-19 can take anywhere from 2 days to 10 days to return. And it really depends on the backlog at the labs. And these are things that you're not going to have control over necessarily.
So I'm excited to dive into this topic because obviously, this is what families have really been talking about this last month. And, are you making the right decision for your family? And it's so hard. So, when we were coming up with this topic, I kind of wrote down and thought through some of the questions that I've had from families that I'd also love to hear, your side and your answers for as a pediatrician, that, I think are really important as we go forward through the school year. So one of the first things that I know families have really talked to me about is what kind of cleaning procedures should the parents look for at school so that they have a peace of mind when they send their children to school?
Mm-hmm. I think most schools have very specific cleaning protocols in place now. And I think as a parent, asking them about them, and getting a good sense of when are they cleaning surfaces, how often are they cleaning surfaces, is helpful for you to know as a parent. I know a lot of schools that are doing hybrid are using that one day when maybe kids are not in school before the second group comes to like turn around the area and do like a deep cleaning. But I think asking the schools is always a good idea to figure out, you know, what they are doing. But the bottom line, Erin, is that, you know, you cannot control how they clean. And sure. You can ask a lot of questions about the protocols, but you just have to trust that the surfaces are cleaned regularly. And you can do certain things to decrease your risk, such as, you know, having your kids wearing a mask all the time. And if the school allows you to send wipes with your kids, you know, you can send your kids with the, you know, an appropriate wipe that they can wipe their cleaning, their, you know, learning surfaces, their desks with before they start their work. You know, some wipes are antibacterial, great. Some are like, you know, antiviral. It's also hard to find those, Erin. So,
yes,
you know.
They're in short supply right now.
Yeah.
Although I will say there was some very cute hand sanitizers out right now with some baby Yodas on them. So I picked those up the other day.
I have not seen those.
I highly recommend them.
Excellent.
So one of the interesting things, I had a specific question from a parent. There's a school near us who decided to use some sort of sanitizing bomb that they would do after the school, the children had left for the school day. And this parent was, you know, very concerned about that. Her son has asthma. And I didn't know if you had ever heard of that before and kind of what your thoughts are on that way of disinfecting.
I've never heard of it. The, you know, specifically like the cleaning bomb that you mentioned, I would be curious to know kind of what ingredients are in it. And as you know, asthma is one of the risk factors for having a harder time with COVID-19. So if I was that parent, I would be a little concerned as well. So, you know, some things to ask the school, you know, how long before the child is in school will you have used this, right? Mm-hmm. How long is the classroom closed for if you do this kind of procedure? And if it's something that's irritating your child's airway, then perhaps schools should change and not use this if this is irritating to your child.
Right. No, that's a great question to ask the school. So a lot of parents, I know, are wondering if there is a case reported in your school, you know, what should they do? What should they look for as we know, you know, these things are going to start to happen as we go along through the school year?
Right. And these things are already happening, you know, and I'll share some anecdotal, you know, information later on. But, you know, cases will be reported. It's not a matter of if that's going to happen. It's a matter of when that's going to happen. We know it will happen. So I think parents should be having a proactive plan for what they're going to do if the kids get quarantined.
Okay.
You know, if the child is in, because you were asking me earlier, Erin, if the child is in your child's class, you know, then that your child, if a child in their class has COVID-19, your child should absolutely be tested.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I love your idea of a plan, because I think a lot of parents, you know, and I speak for myself too, I've looked at the school's plan and understand what the expectations are for me as a parent from the school, but I don't think I've really necessarily thought of my own plan and what I would do in these different situations.
Right. I mean, I had some discussions with parents that said they decided to do all remote option, which we will talk about in a future podcast, because they didn't have resources or caregivers to help take care of the kids if the kids kept getting quarantined.
Sure.
Because if your child gets quarantined, you know, twice in the next 2 months, who is going to stay with them for 2 weeks each time?
Right, right.
So I think that's really something to think about, you know. And again, exposed people need to be tested to limit the spread of the virus. And we've been hearing some people say symptomatic people should not be tested. That is not true.
Okay.
So unfortunately, in some of these situations, some of the guidelines we've been seeing from the CDC do not make any sense. So we have to be really careful as parents, you know, speak to your child's, you know, pediatrician, speak to your family physician and get their recommendations.
I think that's great. And again, it speaks to individually what's, you know, what's going on in your life as a family and the support you have around you and also who you have that's vulnerable around you, and to think about those things.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you anecdotally, like I've seen some children. You know, one child packed a big lunch. He ate a lot at lunch and felt like they were going to throw up.
Aww.
And, you know, they made a face like they were going to vomit and they were sent home.
Wow.
They were told they couldn't return, did not vomit, did not have anything else, just looked like they didn't, you know, feel well and like they felt nauseous, and they were sent home and they were not able to come back until they had a negative COVID test. You know, I'm sure, you know, you've had cases like that at your children's school, but there was another child I saw who coughed for a few seconds because he has, you know, some seasonal allergies, felt like he had a tickle in his throat, and he was sent home for a COVID test, and all his siblings were sent home for a COVID test.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know definitely when I was making decisions that did cross my mind of how often children would be get sent home and kind of what are some of the things the school would be looking for, mm-hmm. And how to make a plan for that. Because as we know, kids get sick and they get sick with a lot of different things. So
right.
I'm sure you're seeing a lot of that in your office.
Well, what we've seen a lot is schools sending kids home and saying they can come back if they have a negative COVID test or if your doctor can write a letter saying they don't have COVID. Now, as you're aware, Erin, a lot of kids have no symptoms. There is asymptomatic spread, and there are people who are asymptomatic with the illness, so no one can really honestly and realistically write a letter saying we can 100% guarantee this person does not have COVID without doing a test.
Sure.
So most people coming in need to get a COVID test, and like I mentioned, you know, it takes anywhere from 2 days to 10 days or more, depending on the testing backlog, for that result to come. So you need a plan.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So I want to shift gears a little bit for our families who have children with a developmental delay. And I know this could probably be a whole separate podcast in itself, but we're just going to touch on it a little bit in the hybrid model. Let's talk about IEPs for a little bit. Okay. You know, it's looking very different this year in the schools and the services that are provided. And I feel like this is brand new territory for us. So are there things that you feel parents should look for in their IEPs if their child is going to a hybrid model?
Well, I think kids are entitled to equivalent services. So I think this is a very steep learning curve for the kids, the parents, and the teachers. I really think that you want to be able to have a team with the IEP that you can troubleshoot with the hybrid model. Now, some schools, if you commit to being in a hybrid situation, you're locked in for a few months. Some schools, you can shift back and forth with a few weeks' notice.
Right.
So having an IEP that maybe if your child has difficulty or you don't know how the hybrid model is going to be, maybe negotiating some leeway in that, you know, time frame when you can shift back and forth might be helpful.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I've had some families, you know, very concerned again about their child wearing masks and have asked questions about putting adaptations in the IEP, such as getting a mask break. What kind of are your thoughts on that and how parents can navigate this?
I think mask breaks are a really, really bad idea.
Okay.
I understand some kids do have sensory issues with masks, but we talked about this in our previous podcast. That's a skill that, you know, we have to teach the kids just like we teach so many other things. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely big challenges with that. This is not an easy thing. But remember that even if you socially distance, some studies show that even if you're 6 feet apart, you know, that may not be enough distance. Sometimes, you know, droplets go a little further. I mean, if you are 6 feet apart or more, it might be a little bit safer to have a mask break.
Okay.
But really, I think the question is, how risk-averse are you? You do want to be 99% safe for your kids or 75% safe.
Sure.
You know, there's no 100% safe, but if you're making kids wear masks at all, you are doing it because it's unsafe to be around other kids without a mask on. And if that's the case, you know, what's the justification for a mask break?
Right, right. No, that's a great point. I know, you know, you were saying, and I've seen this personally, a lot of places are taking breaks, you know, when they're in recess or during gym class, and that seems to be their time to use to take that break.
Yeah, and I think it depends how recess is conducted, but mm-hmm. I've heard of that as well. It makes zero sense to me. If you are having masks on when kids are sitting 6 feet apart at desks, when they're running and playing with each other and talking to each other, not having a mask on doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. So again, with the IEP, you know, if you have a child going to a hybrid model and say, you know, they're going to school 2 days a week and then their 3 days a week are off, what do you recommend about services being provided during those off times? Or how do you think, you know, families should look to kind of navigate when they receive those services like OT or PT or speech?
I think a lot of it is going to depend on the individual family and on the individual child. So, you know, certain services, and, you know, I'm going to ask you to weigh in on this with OT. If you're needing more direct assistance, it makes sense to do some of those more in person. I think speech therapy oftentimes is easier to do online compared to OT or physical therapy. You know, sometimes there's a balance between not cramming everything in one day, so you have some fun things to look forward to on a remote or, you know, cyber learning days as well. But it really, you know, as parents, you know, encourage you to be advocates for your children. And I think that a lot of the therapists that get to know your kids over time are really good advocates. So you can say, yes, I think they'll do well with this. And if not, here's our plan for changing.
Right. No, I like that. I mean, I like kind of that staggered approach to planning of, you know, this is how we're going to start, but it can be modified. And we know that, you know, as providers, that that IEP is something that's a constantly changing document. And you can, you know, you're, I think school districts are going to have to experiment this year and see what works best and then reinvent and write it again and again.
I completely agree. And I think part of what you should, you know, make sure is you have a team that will be flexible with you and realize that this is really, really hard for everyone.
Right.
So we just have to kind of work together.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. So what about, you know, I've seen these pictures, I have to say lately, and it breaks my heart as a mom, looking at these social times that kids can have during lunch and recess. You know, everyone's at their own table, they're facing forward. I mean, we know this is the time where kids would be able to kind of practice some of those speech therapy skills and be able to have that social piece and that break time. What would you say to families who kind of look at some of those pictures and just go, oh, this is just not the way it's supposed to be in school?
I think it's heartbreaking, and I think that it's very, very hard, because one thing that's important to remember is, for people that are, you know, cyber schooling, I also want them to know that, you know, lunch and recess and that social time is not what it used to be like in the, you know, fall of 2019.
Sure.
It's not that social experience. And I think that it's really hard. Even at lunch, recess, things look very, very different. They don't look like what they look like a year ago or 2 years ago. One thing I take heart in is that kids are amazingly resilient.
Yes.
And they find a way to have fun in the most trying circumstances. So I feel good about the fact that, you know, and we'll talk in a different episode about some of the challenges facing kids with the pandemic, emotional challenges and those kind of things. But I do take some solace in the fact that kids are amazingly resilient. They find fun in the most, you know, stressful circumstances. So I feel like, you know, I think that they will find some small way to enjoy recess or lunch, but it'll be, they'll have to learn a new way to enjoy recess in this capacity, because the old way is no longer here.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. I have to say, looking at the school year and watching kids go into the school with their masks on, and you know, they're so resilient, and they, I really, as adults, I think we could take a lesson from our children for sure. You know, I've seen kids at football practice wearing full masks and running laps, and, you know, then we hear an adult who complains about wearing it for 5 minutes. So, you know, I think we can always take a look at our kids and say, you know, if they can do this and still be positive, then we certainly can too.
And I think that's one of the, like, really, like, blessings of working with kids, that they give you a different perspective.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, you can really learn from kids, and you can learn how to be more resilient, more positive about some of these things.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's probably one of my favorite things about working with children.
Mine too.
So speaking of that, you know, I had mentioned some sports and activities, you know, we're definitely seeing that starting. How do you feel about the extracurricular activities, or if there's things that parents should be looking for from those organizations as their kids restart some of these things?
So I think for extracurriculars, it really depends on what activity, right? It depends on how close people are sitting. For example, like theater and singing, we know that there's more respiratory droplet exposure. So that would be a different level of risk. You know, if you have, for example, debate club and you're talking at two different ends of the room, that might be a much lower level of exposure. It really depends. But sports, I think it is very, very difficult to socially distance with sports. Mm-hmm. My hat's off to the team that you mentioned who are running with the masks and able to do all of those things. But I think most athletes, when they are sweating, find it hard to wear masks. And when engaged in brisk aerobic activity, you know, people breathe hard and they release more droplets. So sure. I think for some sports that are outdoors, you may feel safer, but, you know, if you're playing soccer, for example, you're still going to have a good amount of exposure, you know. And in kids sports, like ideally you'd have a rapid test that kids could take and use. But without that, it's, I like to call it like more for like a blind exposure, you okay. know, but it depends on the sport, right? Cross country, lot less exposure.
Sure.
Wrestling, soccer, football, basketball, more contact type sports. So a lot more exposure. So I think specifically asking the team, what is your protocol for handling it? Is everyone that are, a lot of sports are asking people to be tested before they come in.
Right.
So I've seen some people coming in requesting tests for sports, but majority of people are not being asked to do that. And I think that, you know, again, there's a lag time issue that we have right now. So I think asking the coach, what is the protocol for if someone is positive, what happens to the games, what happens to practice, mm-hmm. how long does someone have to be quarantined, and are people coming in with testing, or is that something that you... only if you get exposed, you get tested for right. the team.
No, I think that's great. And I think those are great questions to ask, you know, any activity that your child decides to go into. And I do think, again, I applaud all the teams and the activities that I've seen lately, because I know this is, again, this is new for them. So they're creating protocols that mm-hmm. have never been in place before, mm-hmm. And trying to take the guidance from, you know, the states and the CDC and other authorities to really keep their kids safe. So, you know, obviously lots of people are trying to keep their kids safe, and it's mm-hmm. just a matter of looking at these to just, like you said, decide how much exposure are you willing to have with your child.
Right. I mean, I'll give you an example. I've seen some kids with band, and parents made these specially designed masks that their instruments can fit through the masks.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're able to, you know, wear them while they are still playing their instruments. And I thought that was amazingly creative.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yep.
I love it. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about another outside activity of school is really daycare, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we know there's so many working parents out there who are trying to make this hybrid model work, but on those off days need someone, either a grandparent or to put their child in daycare for those other 3 days. Kind of what, you know, what are some of your thoughts about that? And again, what can parents do to feel as safe as they can mm-hmm. When they have to make this decision?
Right. I think having a frank discussion with your kids about, you know, what is safe, what are things that keep them safe, you know, if they're able to do so. If they're able to do so, I would encourage, you know, kids, depending on their, you know, level of development and age, to try to help them to be advocates for themselves a mm-hmm. little bit. You know, many kids cannot do this, but, you know, for all kids, I think having a frank discussion with daycare about what are their procedures, so there are no surprises. Now, a lot of times, you know, we are recommended as pediatricians, if I ask someone how often they're taking the medicine, it's never a good idea to say, how often are you taking the medicine? Or it's a better question to say, do you miss your medication twice a week, 3 times a week, or 4 times a week? You're more likely to get a more honest answer.
Okay.
So I think that when you ask daycare, do you wear masks? It's a better question to say, you know, how often do staff members remove their masks? How often do children remove their masks? Mm-hmm. And, okay. you know, ask how often surfaces are disinfected. And remember that both at school and daycare, a lot of times it's at a teacher's discretion when masks can be removed. And I bet in daycare, it's a little bit, you know, more at the teacher's discretion because there's no school-wide policy they're following.
I see.
So I think that you should ask those specific questions and then, you know, try to see if you can have a plan with your child about how they're going to handle it if someone else maybe is doing something differently than what you talked about.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and, I think to talk about it, you know, in sort of that educational piece to it, I think parents really need to ask those questions about who's going to help with the online learning if mm-hmm. the children are at daycare mm-hmm. and kind of what that's going to look like, because I think that is a big concern. You know, is your child going to be in a room by themselves? Are they going to be in a room with 20 other children trying right. to learn at the same time?
Right, right. Yeah. It's a tough situation.
It is. I think there's no right answer, no easy answer. Mm-hmm. You know, and every family is so individualized with what they can do. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of recap a little bit, it really sounds like no matter what situation families are in, whether they're, you know, putting their child in hybrid or daycare or they're doing an extracurricular, you're really recommending, you know, find out what their plans are. Mm-hmm. Really take a look at that, but then also plan for yourself as a family of what you're going to do if there is an exposure or if you need to take some time off away from these activities that you're looking to join.
Yes. And you know, a lot of people, you know, have talked to me about, you know, how are we supposed to make this work? And, you know, I just want people to realize that this is an impossible situation.
Right.
Like, I would compare it to, like, being thrown in the ocean with hungry sharks around you and no life vest and told, well, you can swim ashore safely. Why are you complaining? Other people are making it work. Why can't you? You know, if you feel like this is ridiculous, it's because it is ridiculous. And honestly, there's never been an event which shows us how ill-prepared we were for a situation like this because of no paid medical leave, no universal childcare, and no other supports for parents. You know, the safety net for a lot of parents, you know, Erin, is their parents, sure. you know, grandparents who watch kids, but due to the risk of COVID, a lot of them can no longer do it. And, you know, I've heard stories of kids whose grandparents used to drop them off or take them to therapies, you know, because a lot of times when kids have developmental delays, you count on that village you have to help you.
Right.
But now that village is gone. They have to stay isolated for their health. And, you know, the burden on parents is severe for everyone. But, you know, for parents with kids with special needs, it's like it's an unbearable situation right now.
Right, right. No, I love your analogy there, and I know it certainly does feel like you're swimming with no life vest and just keep yeah. on treading. So,
yeah.
you know, I think it's always important to recognize that that's a feeling that everyone's going through right now.
Yeah, and I think just take it day by day. It's overwhelming. Just take it day by day. And if you need to talk to your school, if the hybrid option is not working, if you need to do something different, just having that open line of communication.
Right, right. So I know we talked a little bit about ending our podcast on a nice positive note,
yes.
right? And so what are we calling this little ending?
I think so. I really like in the New York Times parenting, they do this tiny victories
okay.
idea where a parent sends in something that is positive, some kind of tiny victory they achieve with their kids.
Wonderful.
And, you know, if any of our listeners, you know, follow the New York Times parenting, you know, thread, I think that's a great one. I recommend everyone, you know, follow them. But I think one of the things that's, you know, we still have to work on a name for this, but
okay.
I thought it would be fun if we end with, you know, in our episode notes, we'll end with like a positive or funny video or something like that.
Excellent.
To leave you with something fun. And also, you know, I think we could talk about personal parenting or other, you know, maybe healthcare related victories that we've had or fun experiences that we've had or a fun interaction. And you know, you can have a really long day and one fun interaction just carries you through.
Absolutely. I think we all need something to smile about. And so I love that. And I'll share a personal victory if that's okay with you.
Sure.
We just finished up our first week of cyber school. And you know, my children knew that it was gonna be a lot, and there was gonna be a lot of ups and downs. And my little guy closed his computer Friday at 2 o'clock, and then ran through the house yelling, "I did it! I did it! I made it through the week!" And it was sweet. And I think it's probably how every child and parent felt after this week of school. So.
Right.
Just wanted to share that as our first one.
No, that's a great one. You have to hold on to those things to carry you through to the next week.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Please subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram. And we look forward to talking to you guys again soon.